concerns. However, their waiver costs represented only 1.6% of total tuition revenue. The Community Technical College system has 14 sites in Connecticut, and among all the students enrolled in that system, 2.6% of were veterans, and their waiver costs were only 2.4% of tuition revenues. All told, 2.5% of all students enrolled in a degree program at a state-run school were veterans. Their tuition waiver costs represent only 1% of tuition revenue. Analysis of the Commission's report revealed two additional points. First, that the majority of veterans enrolled in higher education in Connecticut are attending a local community technical college, 62%, and to a lesser degree, a state university, 35%. Indeed, only 3% attend the more expensive UConn. Veterans enrollment percentages should be viewed in the larger context of Connecticut's labor market economy in 1992. By then, already 3 years into a recession, we'd already lost about 140,000 jobs. And this suggests a second point regarding the Commission's report. The legions of dislocated workers in search of retraining opportunities caused a dramatic increase in enrollment in post-secondary schools in 1992. And yet, of the 380,000 veterans residing in Connecticut that year, only 2,800, or 0.7% of them, received tuition waivers. Back when the debates about creating the tuition waiver program occurred in the General Assembly in the 70s, the big fear on the part of universities and local politicians connected with universities was that it's going to break the budget. The state can't afford this. The Office of Fiscal Analysis and the General Assembly conducted their studies, and they were unable to conclude with any degree of certainty how much it was going to cost. Gradually, the tuition waiver was implemented, first with Vietnam-era veterans, later with Korean veterans, in 81 the National Guard, as I'd mentioned, folks 62 years of age and older, graduate assistants. And what we've learned is that while the tuition waiver program is not revenue neutral, the costs are not that great, and schools are reimbursed over the 2.5% granted against the total tuition revenue account, and that's a rather low threshold. So the general fund, the state, will reimburse each school for unanticipated costs over and above what the school will budget for in their operating fund. And what we've learned over the years is that it's not a budget breaker. And the benefits are great. 1992, the cost was a little bit over $1 million. Now, in my written statement, I've also provided argument that the concept of work should be viewed as a veterans' health issue. And I believe that it's an issue that's not being appropriately addressed by the VA, and I think it's a concept that hasn't been embraced by clinicians in this country, not only clinicians who treat veterans, but I think across the board. Unemployment introduces into one's life psychological flack that has to be processed, and unemployment denies individuals the opportunity to achieve definition in their lives. What do you do for a living? Well, I'm unemployed. My label is missing. The longer one is unemployed, the greater the confusion, particularly in the labor market economy as it exists today. In our state, we've lost well over 200,000 jobs during this recession. Regionally, it's been, I don't know what the statistic is, but I know it's pronounced. There seems to be a growing awareness of corporate downsizing and how it's affecting our population. There seems to be a malaise that's going across the country in our labor market. The New York Times last Sunday began a 7-day series, which I thought was quite good. In the first series, there was discussion that clinicians are now beginning to diagnose dislocated workers with post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, we could argue the appropriateness of that diagnosis, but the point that I think that remains true is that unemployment affects people's health. Now, when we look at veterans, we know that PTSD, a hallmark of PTSD, is industrial impairment. And yet, in veterans' treatment plans, both inpatient and outpatient, rarely is vocational rehabilitation discussed. Rarely is the veteran's livelihood looked at. And I think that would extend to other clinical services within VA hospitals. Rarely is the concept of vocational rehabilitation introduced as part of the continuum of care for folks that are getting out of inpatient treatment for substance abuse or for psychiatric disorders. Now, I'm happy to report that we've had energetic debate on this subject within Connecticut on the VA Connecticut Healthcare Systems Mental Health Advisory Committee. And VA is now taking steps to introduce comprehensive assessment into their psychiatric clinical treatments and also to strengthen their Veterans Industries program with more vocational counselors, and case managers. VA recognizes that if we're going to break the relationship between clinician and patient and help the latter gain a more meaningful definition in their life other than patient, that of computer expert or bricklayer or whatever, that we need to address the issue of veterans' livelihood. Now, I've written about it in my written testimony, so I won't go beyond what I've commented on. I would end by saying that few would dispute the belief that our nation bears responsibility to ease the plight of servicemen and women whose lives have been harmed while defending it. That the faith we place in those we commit to action in our name requires investment in equal measure and of concern and support upon their return. It's been said that laws are the letters that civilization writes to itself. For the most part, our nation's writings about its veterans describe feelings of gratitude, respect, and compassion. But when it comes to the health of veterans' livelihood, however, we've only begun to write. That would conclude my statement. I would welcome any questions.
One quick question.
Go ahead,
Gary. Well, first, I'd like to compliment you. Excellent testimony, written testimony. I was reading.
Thank you.
On the tuition waiver, does that apply to graduate school too, or just?
Yes, it does.
It does. Thank you.
Is it general assent and support for the tuition waiver from the educational institutions and the higher education community at large?
Yes.
So was that always the case?
No. In the 70s, there was a lot of fear that it was this tuition waiver program would be a budget buster. And in the debates that occurred at the time, the outcome was that, okay, we'll cap it at 2.5% against waivers granted against total revenue from the tuition waivers, from the tuition revenues. And the state will reimburse the facilities for anything over and above that. And that allayed some fears. But what we're finding is that most veterans are going to the community college system. Tuition is very minimal as opposed to UConn's. Tuition at UConn, it costs $12,000 a year to go to UConn now. And about $1,000 a semester for a community technical college. And as my testimony had indicated, that 65% of veterans enjoying the tuition waiver are in the technical college system.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Has that had a positive effect on the recruiting in the reserve components?
I'm sorry?
Have you seen a positive effect on the reserve component strength, reserve National Guard, through the tuition waiver?
I would say yes. We in Connecticut have a very strong leader in the form of Adjutant General Dave Gay. And as you probably know, there's been an effort to riff entire divisions within the Guard, and he's gone to Washington, and he's working hard to protect the current strength levels in Connecticut. I think it has been a means to attract new membership in the Guard.
Because we don't have that, and our strength is in terrible shape.
Mm-hmm. If I could just comment, I've had conversations with Mr. Tochi and with the commander of the New York Guard, Gary, and there are young people who want to enlist in the Guard but don't want to go full-time on active duty who are now moving from New York State into Massachusetts and Connecticut to join their Guard in order to get the tuition waiver and go to school in Massachusetts and Vermont, or excuse me, Massachusetts and Connecticut. And I understand Connecticut's National Guard and Reserve units are oversubscribed, whereas
sure.
New York is less than 60% of authorized strength. Jim, I just want to, because of limited time, and I know you need to also take off to go back to Hartford, I want to say both on behalf of the council and personally how much I appreciate your submitting this excellent statement. Want to pick up in further conversations, if we may, both myself as mother, well as other members of the council, on the whole concept of health as directly tied into the type of work that one does and whether or not one has meaningful work at a decent living wage. Mm-hmm. The one question that I would ask, you mentioned the Mental Health Advisory Council. There is not such an entity, to my knowledge, in New York State, in either the upstate network or the downstate network, that is currently appointed of lay members from the veterans community. Is this a particular entity that was developed only in the state of Connecticut, or are they all supposed to have it?
Well, it's an initiative that I think began at least in my sphere of veterans advocacy with Vietnam Veterans of America. It was a national resolution several conventions ago encouraging veterans advocates to approach local VA medical centers in the hope that we could create consumer advisory boards and councils. What spurred the creation of the Mental Health Advisory Board in Connecticut was the sad occasion of a number of veteran suicides some 4 or 5 years ago in West Haven. There were seven veterans who were significantly psychiatrically disabled and symptomatic who had either been not appropriately taken into the facility or who had been inappropriately discharged. And they had committed suicide. That created a lot of pain, confusion, and debate about the appropriateness of treatment. And veterans advocates in the state of Connecticut, Linda Schwartz in particular, who was our Region 1 director at the time, approached the hospital and said, look, we need to sit down and talk about some of the things that are going on here. We think that we can play a role in helping you straighten out your problems. They welcomed us, and in many respects, this particular clinical service views us as their board of directors. They come to us to bounce ideas off of. In Connecticut, VA, the two campuses, West Haven and Newington, have recently merged. And following the example of the Mental Health Advisory Committee, they set up an advisory committee for the integration process. And they found that was quite beneficial. We can be a tool to educate the veteran community about some of the changes, the challenges, the needs. How can we support the VA so that it can better perform its mission? So they've used us as a conduit to communicate within the veteran community. And we, of course, have had the opportunity to critique some of their performance and to help them straighten out some of the things that they're doing.
Well, Mr. Tackett, I want, on behalf of the committee and the council, I want to thank you. I'm sure that your testimony there, there's lots we could help us in New York State.
Great.
I'm sure And thank you.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
I will now call a recess for 1 hour for lunch. Bart Klein, Legislative Chairman, Vietnam Veterans of America, New York State Council. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Mr. DeMarco. On behalf of John Rowan and the leadership of Vietnam Veterans of America, I thank you for the opportunity of presenting testimony before this council on employment and education and training. VVA believes that the ability to be able to obtain meaningful employment at a decent living wage is a very significant issue. We also believe that having the ability in today's environment of downsizing in corporate America and also in the public sector, and having the ability to be retrained and having access to education, higher education, is extremely important in putting an individual veteran back into the work environment. I absolutely agree with what Mr. Tackett said, that a person's inability to find employment affects his mental health status. As a service officer for Suffolk County Veterans Service Agency, I deal on a daily basis with veterans coming into my office, not only looking for claims and benefits, but also looking for employment and needing to access health care services with the VA. And in many cases, when veterans are not willing to go to the VA, they look to state and local government for health care services. The two previous public forums that we held here in Albany addressed a number of issues which showed that some state agencies were, I would say, negligent in their recognition of their responsibility to deliver specific specialized services to veterans. As we had previously found out, the Office of Alcohol and Substance Abuse Services had recognized approximately 11,000 veterans in their system at any given day, yet only one treatment facility specifically dedicated to veteran services was to be provided by that state agency, and yet it is not online. The Office of Mental Health Services, to this day, does not seem to recognize its responsibility in delivering specialized treatment services to veterans, yet they spend approximately $2.1 billion. That, to me, and I believe to Vietnam Veterans of America, is an unacceptable response on the part of the Office of Mental Health. We need solutions to these problems. VVA has specific recommendations that we will make as part of this testimony, which we believe will help to resolve some of these issues. One of these suggestions is, as we have discussed in our legislative agenda, is fair share. There are 1.6 million veterans in the state of New York. They have dependents which make up a rather large, significant portion of the population of the state of New York. We are asking for our fair share of resources and attention to veterans programs, agency by agency, as part of New York State's responsibility in delivering services to veterans. We also would like to address the issue of education. Many years ago, approximately 10 years ago, VVA was instrumental in creating the Vietnam Veteran Tuition Awards Program. A successful program to bring in-theater, in-country Vietnam vets an opportunity to go back to school and improve their skills and their education to enter the job market. We believe it's time to expand the program, to broaden the program, to bring in veterans as defined by New York State law, Persian Gulf veterans, veterans of Lebanon, Grenada, Panama, so that they can enter into educational institutions, improve their skills, and enter the workforce. We believe that graduate school is extremely important, something that has been overlooked for the past decade. As corporations and as the public sector downsizes, veterans who have college educations may need retraining and upgrading of their skills by going on to graduate school. The opportunity should be made available so that they can get the skills and education to enter a technological age and re-enter the workforce. Third, and extremely important, VVA urges the legislature to re-establish the Veterans Office at CUNY. I work part-time for the Queens chapter of VVA in Regal Park. We have veterans who come into that office seeking knowledge about the educational opportunities, the grants, the programs, as they enter into the CUNY system. The fact that the office is now closed and that maybe an individual who will spend a small portion of their time providing this information to veterans is not sufficient. We need a full-time office. We need somebody who has the knowledge and the ability to impart all the necessary educational material so that veterans can access all of the benefits they are entitled to. The state university system used to have veterans counselors at the state university colleges and throughout New York. That no longer exists, and we urge the creation of veterans counselors who can provide this educational information to veterans entering the state university system so that they can be made aware of the federal and state benefits they are entitled to receive. Fourth, the Vietnam Veterans American New York State Council urges the legislature to ensure that already existing laws are rendered more effective in fulfilling the legislative intent to enforce the Constitution of the State of New York. VVA requests that the Senate and the Assembly introduce and enact legislation that would create, at no cost to the general fund, a temporary commission on veterans' employment to look at all of the aspects of veterans' employment programs to ensure that veterans' preference laws are protected and that veterans have access to jobs in the civil service system. We ask that an annual report by each agency to be delivered to the Director of the Division of Veterans Affairs by Memorial Day each year. If the Division of Veterans Affairs cannot, after consulting with the Commissioner of Civil Service, certify in good conscience that an agency is in compliance with the Constitution, then the funds for operation for that agency may not be released for the fiscal year quarter that begins in July 1 of that year. We urge the strengthening of Chapter 553, the Veterans Bill of Rights for Employment Services. VVA urges that this law be made explicitly to apply to all programs, all state agencies that administer programs and services specifically and indirectly enhance the ability of veterans to obtain meaningful employment. To ensure compliance, we request that there be an annual report to the Director of the Division of Veterans Affairs by February 1 of each year. We further urge that the Director of Veterans Affairs be given power to certify or not certify an agency as to whether they are in compliance with the law. If an agency fails to be in compliance or make reasonable progress or to a plan to get into compliance, then that agency should have their funds for all purposes held back on April 1 until they do get into compliance. Lastly, the issue of the Workers for Disabilities 55VNC program. VVA urges that the legislature modify this program so as to make this program one that works as its original author, the late Honorable Richard J. Connors, originally envisioned. We are asking that this program be brought into compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act. We are calling for meaningful career ladders and to make sure that as veterans are placed into positions, they are not dead-end jobs. This is what Dick Connors envisioned. This is something that we feel strongly about and would be a strong legacy to Richard Connors that this program be named after him and that his intent for this particular program be followed through. That completes my remarks. I passed out testimony. to the committee, and if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Pete?
Since the Vietnam Veterans of America are part of our association, your recommendations, I'm sure, would be studied, and I'm sure that they will be taken seriously and implemented where we be able to do the right thing for our veterans of the state of New York. I want to thank you and John Rohn. I'm sorry he's not here today.
And
thank you for the fine presentation. I'm sure that as part of the organization, we'll study it, and we're going to do the best we could with it.
Ralph, let me, on second thought, I do have a question. On the eliminating the position at CUNY, why was that? What reason was given? Do you know? Money?
I believe it was partially financial.
The mayor cut.
But I'm sure we'll be hearing more about that
yes.
in this afternoon's testimony.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll hear more about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ralph.
Thank you very much. Who is that now?
John Howe.
Mr. John Howe, District Legislative Representative for the 369 Veterans Organization. Welcome, John.
Welcome. Thank you for having me. I'd like to apologize for being late. I'm going to be joined momentarily by Logan Lewis, who's the Executive Director of the Apple Therapeutic Treatment Community in Long Island. We've just had some disheartening discussions about some issues regarding funding for veterans beds at drug treatment facilities that he's been up here working on. So I'd like to just, when he's available, yield a minimum of my time to him so that he may just enlighten us to what's going on. I provided a written statement, however, I did not provide adequate copies because of a time constraint that I was working under this morning, but I'd just like to give greetings to all of those people on behalf of the 369th Veterans Organization who are visiting Albany and those who are here. For those of you who don't know, the 369th is a federally chartered, congressionally chartered veterans organization that was started in the late 40s in honor of those veterans, the Hellfighters from Harlem, the old 15th New York Infantry, who fought so valiantly in World War I. Currently, of course, we know that Henry Johnson Boulevard here in the city of Albany is named after Sergeant Henry Johnson, the first American to win the Croix de Guerre and also a member of the 369th Infantry Regiment, colored of the United States Army. It's really disheartening for me to be sitting here right now talking about the progress or the lack of progress that's been made in terms of dealing with veterans matters and state government, particularly in the area of employment, education, and training. We have had some what we thought were going to be minimal successes in terms of veterans, particularly in employment in the state of New York by New York state government, but we have found that many of those advances that we've seen have been taken away. 7 years ago, a group of veterans, the New York State Council of Black Veterans Organizations, met right here in this room and in several other rooms around this complex for approximately 48 hours. Pete Sutton was a member of those meetings, and we generated a legislative plan for action to assist veterans in the areas of employment, training, education, health, and other social benefits. And the same things we talked about then, we're talking about now. The fact that we have had no progress is evident. The fact that most politicians see us as just a fuzzy ball to be petted upon at all times except election time when they attempt to come out and get our votes. I think that part of that's due to the fact that most people who sit in the halls of power in this country today have nobody who is of credible in the veterans community sitting in those halls of power. And I really think that to include the current administration, both in Washington and here in the state of New York, owe an apology to the veterans of this country and of this state for the way they're being treated. I think that it is disheartening for me to sit here and talk about the fact that we have a budget in major state agencies to include the Office of Mental Health, where they only have, I think it's 48 beds allotted to veterans across the entire state of New York. I think that when we look at drug and alcohol abuse, that it's a shame that we have so very few treatment facilities and beds that are dealing with that situation. On that note, I would like to yield just a few moments of my time to Logan Lewis, the Executive Director of the Apple Therapeutic Treatment Community, and also one who's been actively in this involved in the legislative struggle for for substance and alcohol abuse programs. Logan.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Logan Lewis. I am the president of APPLE. It stands for a program planned for life enrichment. It's a large human service treatment provider in the Nassau-Suffolk area on Long Island. We do mental health services, alcoholism and substance abuse, HIV/AIDS, as well as health services. But I also serve as the co-policy chair for the New York State Association of Alcoholism and Substance Abuse Providers, and I'm the vice chairperson of the statewide Black and Latino Alcoholism and Substance Abuse Task Force. And I was just at lunch with Mr. Howe, and we were discussing out what I'm up here for, which is dealing with alcoholism and substance abuse treatment services. And we were talking about veterans, and I was making him aware of the fact that one of my colleagues, who has a rather large program in Queens, Samaritan Village, run by Mr. Richard Pruss, has negotiated a contract for a program for beds specifically for veterans with substance abuse problems, whose budget is now being cut. The budget, part of that budget was coming from the OASIS budget. In the governor's budget, they proposed to cut about $42 million from treatment services to OASIS-funded community-based organizations, which provide a wide variety of services to veterans. A large proportion of our client population are veterans. And when you look at the substance abuse treatment services that are provided in the VA hospitals, most of those services are short-term treatment services when you talk about residential beds. And many of the veterans who have a serious or chronic alcoholism and substance abuse problems are in need of long-term residential treatment. And I think that when you look at the number of factors that impact on individuals in need of treatment services, when you think about homelessness, when you think about individuals developing more appropriate marketable job skills, when you think about all the health-related issues related to substance abuse treatment, you find it very, very difficult to provide services to some of the veterans. One of the things that has happened in our treatment program, we are funded by OASIS to provide treatment services. Those individuals who are getting benefits as veterans, when they come into our treatment services, a large half of our funding comes from social services, because some of the veterans are not eligible for social services benefits, and because their treatment is provided by the veterans hospital in that locality, there is no way for us to get paid for providing long-term residential treatment services to veterans in need of those services, because they don't meet the eligibility criteria to receive those social services dollars that support half of our residential treatment, and they're therefore referred to day treatment or outpatient treatment services because there's no money to pay for the service for them, and the Veterans Administration doesn't have long-term residential programs. So I think that the issues that we really need to look at so far as the provision of adequate alcoholism and substance abuse treatment services to veterans that are impacted not only on the OASIS side of the budget, but also in the welfare reform pieces and things that are going to affect Medicaid managed care. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Logan. I thought it was important enough for Logan to say that piece because most of the guys that I deal with who are veterans in the street who are looking for jobs or training have a problem with either alcohol or substance abuse. And in terms of getting them well is probably the first step towards getting them into a meaningful treatment meaningful education and training program where they can achieve some goals to benefit themselves to become, you know, an independent living person, one who is capable of making a successful and meaningful contribution to society. The area I'm principally concerned with right now is that of education, training, and employment. I see much that goes on that makes me sick in terms of the way veterans are treated by people who are involved in these programs. For instance, it seems to be that at the community college level and other college levels, we're seeing that they put an end to those people who are veterans coordinators and who could help veterans in terms of transitioning and finding a way through the maze of programs that comprise education. I know that when I came back from Vietnam and entered into a program at the State University College at Old Westbury, it was the veterans counselor who helped me to direct my efforts at obtaining my education and instead of hitting people in the head. You know, I think that was important that we have someone who you can talk to while you're going through the system. We do not provide in New York State under the Vietnam Tuition Assistance Program for graduate education. I think in today's society it's necessary that we extend that program to provide for graduate education, because in today's society a bachelor's degree is just like having a GED, it seems, because everybody's got one, although we need more of it. We need to get some graduate education. We need to have federal time limits apply to the state program in terms of education. Let me give you the reason why. I am a 100% unemployable veteran. My family has been given, my surviving spouse and my surviving children, as they say, have been given the right to use my educational benefit. Well, in that case, my wife would not be able to use it because the time limit expires, and the state program also does not apply to her as the federal program should. If the benefit applies to the veteran, I believe that the benefit should apply to the surviving spouse or the children of a veteran. When we come time for looking at education, we need to look at re-education. In this downsized environment, you know, I have fallen victim to, just like many other people, although I had the unemployability to fall back on. This morning we heard about people who were, their skills were not kept up in terms of what they were looking for in a new society. But we need to look at retraining. Veterans who are victim of downsizing and market integration and the movement of our jobs offshore and relocation need to be provided for by the state in a meaningful way. Not a slipshod, haphazard, lip service kind of program, but one where a veteran can lay his hands on and get some meaningful training so that he can go on to something else. A member of our organization did 28 years with NIMO and was laid off when they downsized. A Vietnam veteran, when he applied for his pension benefit from NIMO, he was told that he was not eligible for his benefit because when he returned from Vietnam, he was put into a temporary item at NIMO instead of the permanent item he left. Therefore, the time that he had while on a temporary item, while he was waiting to be returned to a full-time item, he lost that credit for his pension and therefore was not eligible when they laid him off under the downsizing program that they had. It has been 2 years that this man who served 28 years at NIMO and 2 years in the United States Army, 30 years of service in a continuous glomp, has no income coming in. And I think that that's a shame and it's a sin that we would let that happen in our society today. I think that we need to take a look at things like that with an attempt to put teeth into the law as it applies to veterans. There are no teeth in the laws that apply to veterans, either when it comes to veterans' preference or reemployment rights or any of those things. I think that as far as I'm concerned, we can take this law that we got right here, what is it, Chapter 553 or whatever it is, February 1993, we can take this and hang it in the men's room and use it for toilet paper. And I think that it's a shame that we sit in this room right here today and that we are in the capital of the state of New York and we are not getting the kind of attention that we need to. They know how to put us in a box, break glass in time of war and pull us out, but they don't know how to treat us when we come home. I think that we really need to have some teeth in the law, and I think that we need to take a very hard look at what goes on. I think that the civil service law is a joke. I think that the recent downsizing in government has shown that there were veterans who were appointed to positions, although they were non-status, they were not political positions. They were veterans who were in positions around in government. And in one case, and I hate to come back to myself, but the way I was treated when they walked in my office and told me to go after 15 years service in throughout several administrations was tantamount to a slap in the face for me. That I was told, well, what about being a veteran? Does that matter? And I was told, I'm a Christian. It's all right. You don't have to worry. So that is the way that I was handled as a veteran. I was very, very shocked at that, and I was really concerned, and I've made it my point of view to let people know the way that veterans have been treated. There's veterans who have been laid off across the state without any consideration for their veteran status in this downsizing, and I think that it's an abomination, and I think that the governor really needs to take a look at that. I don't know if it was him or his people, but somebody needs to review the way that they handle the layoff of veterans. I was told once that I was thanked for my service. In this law, it says here that the legislature hereby finds and declares that the men and women serving in the nation's armed forces are of the highest caliber and intelligence and are dedicated and disciplined. Well, if that is the case, why are they treating us the way that they are? With that, I would close my remarks and be available for your questions.
Mr. Howe, you make a strong case.
Well,
we agree with you fully.
I'm a strong man.
But I also know that we are looking for money. And you know how they cry in Washington and how they cry in Albany.
Well,
and I agree with you fully.
I know they cry.
Just to let you know, you talk about employment in the federal government. There were 820,000 veterans working for the federal government, and it now has dropped to 550,000 veterans. So it's been a drop of nearly 300,000 veterans in the federal government alone. That's downsizing. And I agree with you. And the worst part of it is that directors of agencies seem to get away with it very easily by manipulating the law. And I agree with you. Something should be done, and that's why we have you here testifying, so maybe we can come up with something in the state that will protect some of it on a state level, as well as the federal level.
I'm willing to help you in any way that I can. I know the 369th is dedicated to that. Pete's a member of the 369th.
John, as far as speaking about putting more teeth into the law, what would be your solution or your idea or poison? How would we go about putting teeth in? Would it be on the political level or whatever?
Well, I think we need to really take a good hard look at the way that laws that deal with this are concerned. I know that you go to the Division for Human Rights and they say, oh, we can't bother with you. You're a veteran. You know, what we need to do is find a review mechanism by which we can begin to gather statistics to find out how veterans are adversely impacted. I haven't seen one study in the state of New York that really addresses the issue of veterans employment and, you know, within government and how that has been handled. And I think that that's very important that we find out and we get somebody whose numbers we can trust, because of course, you know, you don't put the chicken in with the wolves and expect them to, you know, say protect that chicken. You know, so we need to do something about that. I think that we need to take a look at penalties. You know, and I would go for liquidated damages when it comes to kinds of things. You know, take some money out of some people's pockets. You know, require people to report on this in an accurate and timely manner. And when someone, you know, fails to report, hold that person responsible for it. You know, that's what we need.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Rick.
John, I don't know that you've had the opportunity to see the legislative agenda of the council, but I urge you to...
I've got a copy of it here.
Review that and to speak with the commander of the 369th and to join us in the ongoing work of the council. I couldn't agree with you more that sanctions are necessary in all veterans' laws if, in fact, they are to be more than meaningless platitudes, no matter how well-intentioned. The testimony delivered by Robin Temple, Deputy Director of the New York State Division this morning, on behalf of John Behan, made that point about Chapter 553. And that is one reason why it is a legislative priority for a number of the member organizations and for the council to revisit Chapter 553, make it more explicit, and to build in sanctions, because it is amazing how reasonable people can be once you have their attention.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry I wasn't here this morning. We had a death in my family, so I was late arriving. But I didn't hear it, I didn't read it, but it makes sense to me, you know, that we talk about sanctions. I think that that's the only thing that people understand, is they know that you walk softly, but you carry a big stick.
I noticed you brought your big stick with you. I would urge you to join with the council beginning at our regular meeting tomorrow, if at all possible, and we certainly would welcome your strong and articulate voice, Mr. Howell.
Well, at the authority of my organization, which I am scheduled to speak at a meeting to request that, I would request that, and hopefully they will see to make that appointment.
Thank you.
You are part of our committee. You're on our...
Well, it's whether the boss tells me to come or not that matters. You know, you know, there's a beef between the World War II guys and the Vietnam guys. I'm not
Gary?
Yeah, I'm particularly interested in the example that you cited with NIMO. Has that been resolved to any degree at all?
It's been so resolved that the guy is just about ready to lose his house. That's the resolution that he's got, is that he's sent out over 400 resumes. He's gone to the Division of Human Rights. He's done everything possible, you know, but he lowballed. He says, you know, I'm a company man. I have faith in, in the company, the people I work for. You know, and he turned around and he got really hurt this way. And I think that the guy's hurting now. It has not been resolved. It appears as though it's not going to be resolved.
Jim, is there anything you can do to help?
Did he have that job with Naomi before he went to military?
Yes, he did.
Why don't you match him up with Jim?
Okay, well, he's been to the Department of Labor. I'll tell you, I sent him to the Department of Labor, and he came back very dissatisfied.
He's on our team.
Did he go to the State Department or the Fed?
He went to the State.
He's federal.
Okay, all right.
Talk to Jim.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
John, you want another question? On behalf of the committee, we want to thank you.
Thank you very much for inviting us.
Representative
from the City University of New York.
The representative from the
Angelo Proto.
Angelo Proto. Welcome, sir, and welcome, ma'am.
Good afternoon. On behalf of Chancellor Ann Reynolds, I welcome the opportunity to speak before you today. My name is Angelo Proto. I'm the University Dean for Student Services at the City University of New York. And with me today is Dean Sheila Thomas from the Office of Student Affairs. CUNY has a proud tradition of serving New York's veteran population. We continue to evaluate and strengthen our services for this population. I'd like to take this time to provide an overview of these services. City University of New York is committed to providing high-quality services to its students who are veterans. The university has in place a comprehensive model for delivery of services which clearly surpasses the intent of Chapter 553 of the laws of 1994, known as the New York State Veterans Rights Bill of Rights for Employment and Training Services. The influx of veterans from 1946 to 1974 compelled many educational institutions, including CUNY, to establish a Veterans Affairs Office to assist with the newly legislated veterans benefits and to counsel veterans. Even prior to admissions, a student may visit the Career Counseling Center of the Clarendon Retired American Institute and achieve extensive career counseling, veteran enrollment.
Mr. Pronto, please.
Slow down.
That's great. You're reading great. I wish I could read as fast as that. And you're reading well. We have your statement.
Okay.
We just sort of condense it. We'll give you, so you have more time for questioning.
Okay.
We have quite an agenda, so we have your statement. I guarantee you that it will be read by this council.
I think then what I will address really is that how the university has reorganized its services to veterans in a three-tier structure.
Please.
Let me just turn.